Today is the 19th of October. It is Chol HaMoed Sukkot, Sunday morning, and this is our class in Masechet Brachot, Perek Shmini, Mishnah Dalet. The fourth Mishnah, which is the fourth in a list of Machlokot between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. So let's read the Mishnah, and then we'll go through the sources in the Gemara and in the Rishonim, and also in one of the Achronim, in order to understand. So the Mishnah says, Beit Shammai Omrim Mechabdin Et Habayit, V'achar Kach Notlin Layadayim. Uveit Hillel Omrim Notlin Layadayim, V'achar Kach Mechabdin Et Habayit. Already said that since these Mishnayot are apparently ordered in the order of the Suda, we already talked about the beginning of the Suda, including Netilat Yadayim at the beginning. Now we're talking about Netilat Yadayim at the end, about Mayim Achronim, and when it talks about Mayim Achronim, it's assuming that from Mayim Achronim you go right into Birkat HaMazon. And the Machlokot seems to be the order. What do you do first? Do you say Birkat HaMazon, which is preceded by Netilat Yadayim, and only afterwards do you Mechabdim Et HaBayit, you clean the house, specifically the room that we ate in? Or is the order the opposite, and first we clean the room that we ate in, and Harkach, and afterwards Notlim Yadayim? That's the question. So why don't we talk a few minutes about the very concept of Netilat Yadayim La'achrona, that is to say, final Netilat Yadayim, Mayim Achronim, and then we'll go to the source that we saw. So sources about the very concept of Mayim Achronim, I photostated at the end of this chuvaret, at the end of this little packet. They're the sources that I called F, and at the very, very end, we can see them. It's a Gemara from Masechet Eruvin. And it says there, in brackets, it's Masechet Eruvin, Yud Zayin Amud Bet. Everyone see the place? Mm-hmm. It says in brackets, Mayim Achronim Chova, Mipnei Shemelech Stomit Yesh, Shemisameh Teinayim. Which means that Mayim Achronim is a Chova, is obligatory. Mipnei, because of Melech Stumit. Because there's such a thing, because Melech Stumit Yesh, because there is Melech Stumit, some type of very strong salt, Shemesameh Einayim, that blinds the eyes. What does that mean? So we go to Rashi. It's at the upper left-hand corner of the page. Upper left-hand corner, Rashi. And he says, it's in brackets, Shemelech Stumit Yesh V'chulei. That's his quote from the text of the Gemara, and he says, "Vamru Rabbanan." The Rabbanan said in Masechet Brachot, Daf Mena, Mud Aleph, "Achar kol achilatcha echol melach, umishum melach shetaval bo etzbo tiknu mayim achronim." Translation: Dachamim said in Masechet Brachot that after every eating, "Achar kol achilatcha," after all your eatings, a whole melech, you should eat salt at the end of every meal. Umishum melech shetaval bo etzbo, and because of the salt that you dipped your finger in, the idea is that you'd eat salt by dipping your finger in the salt and putting it in your mouth. Tiknu mayim achronim, they decreed mayim achronim, because you have salt on your hands at the end of the meal, and then you're going to say Birkat HaMazon, well, you might put your hands, your finger in your eye, and that could be very dangerous when you have a little bit of salt on your finger. That's what Rashi says about this matter of Melech Stomit in the Gemara Masechet Eruvin. Now look what Tosfot says. Tosfot is on the left-hand side, below Rashi. Mayim Achronim Chova, quoting from the Gemara, that Mayim Achronim is an obligation. Akshav lo nahagu b'mayim Achronim. Tosfot is talking in the 12th century in northern France, and he says that now there's not a custom of Mayim Achronim, we don't do it anymore, he says. So even though the Gemara says Chova, Tosfot says no. How could he just change what the Gemara says? He gives a reason. De'ein melech stumit matsui b'yameinu, that this thing called melech stumit, this very, very salty salt, this very dangerous salt, is not found by us. It's not matsui, it's not found. So therefore, even if it is true that we eat salt in the meals, it's not dangerous. So there's no reason for Mayim Achronim. In other words, Mayim Achronim was not really a matter of halakha, it was a matter of sakana, of danger of health. And if the health problem doesn't exist, then there's no need for Mayim Achronim, says Tosfot. Then he says, Inami, or also, in other words, a second alternative explanation of why we don't do Mayim Achronim in northern France of the 12th century. Because we don't have the custom of dipping our fingers in salt at the end of the meal. So either the matter is, perhaps we do eat salt, but our salt is not dangerous, or we don't eat salt at all at the end of the meal. Well, of course, we have a salt shaker, perhaps, but this matter, the Gemara says in Masechet Brachot, that Rashi quoted, that it's customary to eat salt at the end of the meal. Tosfot is assuming that's also not a halakha. That's only perhaps an etzah tova kamashmalan. It's a good piece of advice that it's giving us, perhaps for health reasons. We don't do that anymore. So there's no reason for Mayim Achronim. So whichever way it is, either we don't have salt or we don't have dangerous salt, whichever it is, we don't use salt in the meal, or we do, but it's not dangerous type, whatever it is, we don't hold, says Tosfot, Mayim Achronim. Another source about this, which I noticed that on the previous page, I noticed that it from a Masechet Brachot Daf Nun Gimel at the very bottom here. So turn back one page. Here's another source about Mayim Achronim, and it says in the bracket, Tana Rabbanan, Shemin Ma'akev et the Bracha. Shemin holds back the bracha. What that means is that in time of the Mishnah, in the time of the Gemara, they did not have soap. That's what did they do after the meal? If they had lox, you know, and cream cheese, what did they do? What they did is they put a few drops of olive oil on their hands and they rubbed it. It didn't get clean, but at least covered up the dirt. And then it got absorbed into the skin. That's the best they could do. By the way, you remember that this past summer, I visited the ancient town of Beit Shan, which is the largest excavated town of ancient times in the whole Middle East. And of all the different things they told us there, I remember that one they said is that they didn't have soap, the guides told us, and when they went to the bathhouse, they gave out olive oil to the people, and these like rakes that you would rake your back with and rake your stomach with, they put the oil on their bodies and they raked it off. Scraped it off. Right? A better word is a scraper. So in the meal also, they didn't have soap. They ended the meal by shemen. This shemen makevet the bracha. You can't say berkat hamazon until you first put oil on your hands. Because your hands, I guess, are dirty. You have to clean them. That's Divrei Rabbi Zilai. And then Rabbi Zivai Omer, very interesting, they have almost the same name, these strange names we've never heard before. Rabbi Zivai says, Eino makev, it doesn't hold back the bracha. Even if you didn't put shemen on your hands, you can still say Birkat HaMazon. Rabbi Acha Omer, Shemen Tov Ma'akev, good oil prevents saying the bracha. I'm not really sure what that means. It seems to be saying that not only can't you say Birkat HaMazon without putting oil on your hands, you can't say Birkat HaMazon without putting good oil on your hands. That would seem to be the most strict of all the three opinions. And then Rabbi Zuhamai Omer, and that's really a crazy name. You wonder if something as funny is going on in this Gemara with all these strange names.
Sounds like a play on words.
Right, it's a play on words. Mm-hmm. It seems to be. And we'll see what happens later in the Gemara. Kishem shemizuham pasul avodah, kach yadayim mizuhamot psulot lebracha.
Oh, that's the word play on his name.
Right.
Zuhamot.
Okay. Right. So he says, just like dirty disqualifies sacrificial service, what avodah means, sacrificial service, you can't go into the Beit HaMikdash as a Kohen with dirty hands, kach yadayim mezuhamot, so dirty hands, psulot lebracha, they are disqualified from bracha. And of course, it reminds us of the idea that the Shulchan is like a Mizbeach. You can't go into the Beit HaMikdash with dirty hands. You shouldn't say Birkat HaMazon on the table with dirty hands. Okay. So notice here we have a diatribe against dirt in general, not just against the salt. So it's a different aspect of the same idea. But it is a different aspect. Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. Ana, I, lo zilai, v'lo zivai, v'lo zuhuma yadana. Says Rabbi Nachman Bar Yitzchak, I don't know zilai, that was the name of the first rabbi, and I don't know zivai, and I don't know zuhamai. I don't know any of these guys. And again, you wonder if they really existed or if some type of game is going on here. Because there's no other place in the Talmud that these names appear. Ella matnita yadana. Rather, a braita I know. Damar Rav Yehuda Marav, as it says in a braita of Rav Yehuda Amarav, Vamri Lava Matnita Tana, and there are those who say that it's an anonymous braita. It's not a braita of Rabbi Yehuda Marav. And what does the braita say? It says, Vitkadashtem, this is a quote from the Torah, the word Hitkadashtem, you should be holy, Elo Mayim Rishonim. That refers to Mayim Rishonim, in other words, to what we call Netilat Yadayim. Veitem Kedushim, and you should be holy, Elo Mayim Achonim. That refers to Mayim Achonim. Ki Kadosh, and the words for holy, Zeshem, and that refers to oil. Ani Hashem Elokeichem, the words Ani Hashem Elokeichem, Zo Bracha, that's the Bracha Birkat HaMazon. In other words, there's a verse that says, Vitkadashtem, Veitem Kedushim, Ki Kadosh Ani Hashem Elokeichem. You should make yourselves holy and be holy, because I, your God, are holy. And they make a drasha, it's clear in a smacht, it's not the meaning of the verse, that all the different stages there of holiness, they refer to the things we've talked about, Mayim Rishonim, and Mayim Rachunim, and putting oil on your hands, and then saying the bracha in the end. That whole progression is a progression of holiness. In any case, what we found is one source that says that Mayim Achunim is chova, because of Melech Stomit, and Tosfot there said that it's not chovah because it doesn't apply to us. And a different Gemara now, Masechet Brachot, doesn't mention Mayim Stomit, doesn't mention Melech Stomit, just mentions cleanliness in general. And we could think to ourselves that if Mayim Rachonim, if its source is cleanliness in general and not specifically Melech Stomit, then of course it would apply even today, because even though we don't have Melech Stomit today, not in the 12th century and not in the 21st, we certainly do have filth and dirt that gets on our hands while we're eating. In any case, in the Shulchan Aruch, it's a machloket if Mayim Achonim is Chova or Rishut. To make a long story short.
So do you think that Tosfos got in trouble for saying, in his day, for saying, because the reason isn't there anymore, we don't do it anymore?
Got in trouble.
Got criticized for...
There are certainly many, 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 many great innovations in Tosfot. I don't know. I mean, I'm not a historian.
But how does it come out in the Shulchan Aruch?
I said there are two opinions: Mayim Achonim Chova, and then Mayim Achonim Rishut.
That the Beit Yosef brings
in the Shulchan Aruch, in the Rav Yosef Karom. Yeah. Among some Spardim, for Kabbalistic reasons, Mayim Achonim is very, 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 very central. And among lots of Ashkenazim, it's fallen by the wayside in the footsteps of Tosfot. But I should add that even if you don't hold Mayim Achonim, if your hands are really dirty, you have to wash them before you say Birkat HaMazon. Right? Don't think that if we don't hold Mayim Achonim, that means you can say a bracha with dirty hands.
What do we mean by dirt? When we're eating, does that mean we got some of the oil from the fish?
I'd say if you wouldn't shake the hand of the president with the hand, your hands as they are, then you shouldn't.
So it's food.
Food on your
hands.
Is this also? I mean, to what extent were they using utensils? Either
they weren't.
So, you know, it's kind of a whole different ballgame nowadays.
The hands were dirtier than ours. Mm. But I mean, when I just ate cream cheese, I got pretty dirty. Cream cheese and lox.
I noticed when I was in Eretz Yisrael, that a lot of people, I think probably the majority of people do Mayim Achronim in the Ashkenazi world.
Which community?
I ate by a lot of people, and almost, I can't remember, I literally cannot remember one family who did not do my machronim. When I came outside of Israel, all of a sudden I noticed that the majority of people don't do my machronim.
Okay, it depends again which community you're in. The community I'm in, right. No one does my machronim.
Now,
with the modern understanding of germs, people wash before a meal. You know, non-religious people wash before the meal for safety reasons.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that you don't self-inoculate.
Yes, sir. We should wash before and wash after if you're dirty.
Does anybody know what the Mishnah Berurah take on? More recent take on that? Ashkenazic?
I don't remember the exact details, but I referenced the source here. Shulchan Aruch Siman Kuf Pei Aleph. At the end, I always put additional sources, right? So one of them is the Shulchan Aruch Siman Kuf Pei Aleph, and you can look there for further insight. Okay, let's go now to the material for today. Ready? So we're learning our Mishnah, and for the Mishnah, we learn the Gemara, which everyone started seeing in Chavruta. So we go to the Gemara in Masechet Brachot, Daf Nun Bet Amud Bet, bottom of the page. And it goes on to our second piece of paper. So we read. It says, "Beit Shammai Omrim Mechabdim B'chulei." Right, that's a quote from the Mishnah that the Gemara brings. And it says, "Tana Rabbanan." We learned in a Braita. "Beit Shammai Omrim Mechabdin Et Abayit V'Harkach Notnim Liyadayim." That's a quote from the Mishnah. But then it adds the explanation, and we understand. So we've said in the past many times, the original source is the Braita, and the Mishnah is extracted from the Braita, extracting only the parts that are important, halacha l'maaseh, leaving aside the reasoning, the rationale. For the Braita says, "Mechabdin et abayit v'achar kach notnim yadayin, sh'im ata omer notnim yadayin tchila, nimsa ata mafsid et ha'ochlim." That if you would say that nitilat yadayim is first, and then only afterwards do you clean the table and the house and the floor, nimsa, it turns out, ata mafsid, you disqualify, you destroy, or you lose the ochlim, the food. And we don't understand what could that be, what sense does it make, and what sense do you disqualify, do you ruin the food by saying, by doing nitilat yadayim and birkat hamazon before you clean things off? It's really not clear. It's not clear. Why don't we look at Rashi right now to see what Rashi holds about this? And Rashi says, "Mafsid et ha'ochlim." Everyone see the place?
No.
No. It's right over here.
Okay. Oh, thanks.
Rashi says, "Mafsid et ha'ochlim." Shemayim achonim nitazim aleihem benim asim. That mayim achonim splashes on them, and they nimasim, and they get disgusting. Now, if any food is left, and you now bring water to the table and it spills, well, that food cannot be eaten. Specifically, perhaps breadcrumbs, big breadcrumbs. It just gets ruined. But wait a second, it doesn't seem to make that much sense. Because the Mishnah said that it's not an issue of cleaning off the table, it's an issue of mechabdim et habayit, which usually means sweeping the floor. And what do you mean? The breadcrumbs on the floor are going to get ruined if you do mayim achronim on the table? I don't get it. So this now brings us back to Pesach. What do you remember about Pesach, about how they used to eat in ancient times, which we always talk about on Pesach? Reclining, right? On the left-hand side. And what do they have in front of them when they were reclining on a couch?
Table.
What type of table?
An individual table.
An individual table. So, if it's an individual table, which is pretty small, you can begin to understand there's more of a chance of things falling on the floor, breadcrumbs and water. But add to that now something else, which we find in Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah is one of the Rishonim, and he wrote a commentary on the reef. The reef is the Alfasi who wrote a commentary in the Gemara. I'll remind you, the Alfasi, Rabbi Yitzhak Alfasi, wrote a commentary in the Gemara, which is nothing more than a summary of the Gemara and the Gemara's words, just taking the maskenot and leaving aside the agadot, leaving aside the reasons. And in Spain, during the golden age of Spain, it was very common for Jews not to learn Gemara, but rather to learn Alfasi. And so commentaries were written on Alfasi. And now we're going to read the Rabbeinu Yonah, who's a commentary on the reef. It's called Hilchot Arif. That's the full name of the work. Hilchot Arif. Reef is Rav Yitzhak Alfasi. Alfasi means the Fezi, from Fez. So if we go to that page, which might be cut off a bit at the top, so you can't see that it says there, Rabbeinu Yonah, but it says Rabbeinu Yonah right where my finger is. And that's the right-hand side of the page. The middle part of the page is the reef, and then you have the commentary of the Rabbeinu Yonah on the side, the right-hand side. There's another commentary, the Shuptei Giborim, on the further right. So you see the bracket, right? Matnitin. Quoting from the Reef's quote of our Mishnah, Matnitin. Beit Shamayim rimichadin et abayit b'chokaf notim liyadayim v'chulei. Perush. Minhagam haya. Their custom was. Ahar achila. After eating. Kodim birkat hamazon. Before birkat hamazon. Lesalek hashulchan. To take away the table. We should remember that from Pesach. But we won't go into that now. To take away the table. Which means to lift up the tray. V'lechabed hamakom min ha'atzamot. And to sweep off the place from the atzamot, the bones. V'pirurim, and the crumbs. Shenaflu sham, that fell there. U'bet shamai, it's written in Rashi Tevot. Svir alei, samech lamed, svir alei, he holds. Shemitchila, that at the beginning, yesh lo lechabed habayit, he has to mechabed habayit, he has to sweep the place. V'har kach yitol yadav, and afterwards, wash his hands. Mipanei, because, she'im notel yadav tchila, if he washes his hands first, yiplu hamayim ala peorim, the water will fall on the peorim, on the crumbs. Shel halechem, of the bread, shenaflu tachat ha-shulchan, that fell under the table, b'shat achilat, the hour of eating. The point is, the reason I brought this, is because he tells us that you take the table away and then you do mayim achronim. In other words, there's no table to catch the water that spills. You do mayim achronim, I don't know if you do it into a kli or do it just onto the floor, but it's certainly more likely when there's no table and you're lying down on your left-hand side that some water is going to spritz on the floor where all the breadcrumbs are. And we're afraid that if you do mayim achronim without being mechabed et habayit, the breadcrumbs that are salvageable, that fill on the floor, are going to get ruined. So that's why Beit Shammai says, first do...
I'm just going to eat the milk and just order it to the left.
First do the... Mechabed et habayit, first clean the floor and then do mayim achronim. That's Rabbeinu Yonah's understanding of Rashi's understanding. There are two other understandings that we'll get to.
But if I understood you correctly, it doesn't say make the food inedible. It just says it will
make it disgusting.
Make it disgusting.
You're right.
And if you've ever tried to sweep up dry breadcrumbs, that's one thing. Compared to trying to sweep up
wet breadcrumbs. Right.
So it's a different ultimate purpose. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I see. So right, David is saying that it's simply a technical matter of making it easier to sweep up if you sweep up before you get everything wet.
Because otherwise, once you hear these, the learning here, what we see, they've taken the table away. We're talking about bread on the floor. It's a completely different understanding, different picture of what's going on. And to think that we're ruining the bread, making it inedible, that implies this bread that's fallen on the floor, we intend to eat.
Right.
Which is not inconceivable, but...
I think they would. I think they just had like sawdust or something on the floor, and it's conceivable they would want to pick up the bigger pieces to keep them from getting ruined.
Okay, right. But to us it is a different picture.
Yeah. So your understanding, to me, sounds nice, But it's not what the commentators say. The commentators specifically say that the fear is, in Rashi's interpretation, that yim asu, they will become disgusting. Oh, and you're saying disgusting in the sense of making a mess there.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. If you've ever tried to get up something like that that's wet, it's a disgusting mess.
Well, so what's Rashi saying?
Okay, I hear what David's saying. I think it'll become very clear as we go further that, as nice as that sounds, it's not what they're talking. They really are talking about salvaging the big breadcrumbs to be eaten tomorrow. We'll see. We'll leave it on the table, both possibilities, but I think that's what it'll turn out as we go further.
You can leave it on the table or on the floor, either way.
Okay, let's go back to the continuation of the Braita. Because Beit Hillel also has something to say, not just Beit Shammai. So going back to where we were, on the very first page of the Gemara, after we finished the part of the Braita we finished, you see that I put part of the Braita in parentheses. And actually, in the instruction sheets, I suggested not to see what's in parentheses. That's a part of the text that's very, very difficult to understand, and the commentators say it's probably just a mistake. So we're just going to not deal with it now, although, of course, it's interesting to understand how mistakes develop, and if it's really a mistake, but we don't have time for that. So we're going on to the second page of Gemara, and you can see that the third word there at the top is the first word that's outside of the parentheses. It begins Beit Hillel Omrim. Beit Hillel Omrim, Im Shamash Talmid Chacham Hu, Notel Perurim Sheyesh Behen Kazayit, Umaniach Perurim Shein Behen Kazayit, Messiah Le Rabbi Yochanan, etc. Well, the word Messiah Le is Aramaic, so it can't be in the Braita. So I know the Braita ended with the words She'ein Behen Kazayit. And then the continuation is the Gemara discussing the Braita. Is that clear? So let's go back to this part of the Braita that discusses Beit Hillel. I'll read it again. Beit Hillel Omrim, Im Shamash Talmid Chacham Hu, if the servant, if the butler is a Talmid Chacham, he picks up the crumbs that have a kazayit, and he leaves the crumbs that don't have a kazayit. That's all it says. This is strange. Why is it strange? Because there's a lack of symmetry in this Braita. The Braita, when it talked to Beit Shammai, quoted the law, the Mishnah, and then gave a reason. When it gets to Beit Hillel, it doesn't quote the law. Mm-hmm. Which was in the Mishnah. It just tells us this sentence, and how is this sentence connected to what's going on? So we have to figure that out. One possibility, is the possibility that Rashi would hold by, is that it goes like this. I'll read again. Beit Hillel Omrim, if the servant is a Talmid Chacham, then he knows to pick up the crumbs that have a kazayit and to leave the crumbs that don't have a kazayit. And then we place in here the words of the Mishnah. Right after the Shamash does what he does, then we do Mayim Achronim and Birkat HaMazon, and then Mechabed Et HaBayit. There's the three stages. First, the Shamash, when he finishes eating, he picks up all the big crumbs, leaves the small ones, and we do Mayim Achronim and Birkat HaMazon, and then we sweep the house afterwards. What's going on? Well, what's going on is as follows. We remember from Beit Shammai the fear that crumbs will get wet when we do Mayim Achronim. Says Beit Hillel, no problem. The important crumbs won't get wet because the Shamash, being a Talmid Chacham, will know to get down his hands and knees and pick up the big breadcrumbs. So then, when we do Mayim Achronim, and water does fall on the floor and make a mess, it does, but it doesn't matter, the mess doesn't matter, because the Shamash already took away the important breadcrumbs that are usable for tomorrow. The other breadcrumbs get wet, so what? Right, that does seem to show that the approach you brought up really didn't fit in, at least according to Rashi, doesn't fit in. So that seems to be what's going on. Shammai doesn't trust the servant to get down on his hands and knees and pick up the usable, the reusable bread. Therefore, Shammai says, don't get anything wet. And do kibud habayit before you do mayim rachonim. Hillel seems to trust the servant to do what has to be done. And therefore, we can just go right into mayim rachonim and have the floor swept later. And apparently Hillel feels that if it's possible to go right into mayim rachonim and birkat hamazon before the floor is being swept, that's better. So you have your bracha right after your meal. Whereas Beit Shammai feels it's just too dangerous because the breadcrumbs on the floor that are reusable might get wet. And then you are over, you transgressed what's called bal tashtit, destroying food. So Beit Shammai has his main value, bal tashchit. And Hillel has his main value, having the bracha immediately after the meal. And Hillel's not afraid of bal tashchit because he trusts the servant who's going to get rid of those big breadcrumbs before you get them wet. And then the Gemara goes on to say the following. Messiah le Rabbi Yochanan, this braita supports Rabbi Yochanan. Damar Rabbi Yochanan, that said Rabbi Yochanan, peirin she'ein behen kazayit mutar la'abdan b'yad. Crumbs that don't have a kazayit, it's permitted to destroy them. It's to ruin them. Even though there's a mitzvah bal tashchit, you can destroy breadcrumbs, you can ruin them, you can make them disgusting, even purposely, if they don't have a kazayit, because who's going to eat them anyway? But the implication is that breadcrumbs that do have a kazayit, no, someone might eat them tomorrow. So therefore, you're forbidden from doing anything that might ruin them. And then the Gemara says, "B'mai kamipalge." In what are they arguing? What is the machloket exactly between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai? And the Gemara suggests, "Beit Hillel savri asul ishtamesh b'shamash amaretz." Beit Hillel holds it's forbidden to have a shamash who's an Amaretz. And therefore every shamash is going to know that you're not allowed to leave those big breadcrumbs on the floor. They might get wet. He's going to immediately go in there and get rid of them. And you can say, I do my machronim even before you're sweeping the house. Because the shamash will make sure that those breadcrumbs don't get ruined. But Beit Shammai, Savrei, Beit Shammai holds, mutar lishtamesh b'shamash aretz. He says it's mutar lishtamesh to have a shamash who's an Amaretz. Therefore you can't trust him to get there on his hands and knees and take away the big breadcrumbs. Therefore you better not do mayim rachonim until the house is swept. Okay? Okay. Except for the fact, this whole scenario is pretty strange. This reusing of breadcrumbs have a kazayit. Do they really eat bread off the floor? Right? The assumption is they would eat bread off the floor. That bothers me. Right? Another thing that bothers me is this matter of a shamash that they hold you need a shamash who's a Talmid Chacham to know that you have to pick up the breadcrumbs, so just tell him. I mean, I don't understand.
He didn't know what size.
So tell him. Bring him an aisle and say, that big, you have to pick up. And what's the wedding to Shamash? Who's a Talmid Chacham? And what's going on? So again, two big questions here. Did they really eat breadcrumbs off the floor? And do you really need Shamash, who's a Talmid Chacham, to understand to pick up the breadcrumbs? And therefore, because of these two issues, I want to see two other commentaries. And these two other commentaries might solve one or both of these issues that we just put on the table or on the floor. So the first interpretation I want to look at... I'm sorry, there's a third issue that's on our table. Not just the question, did they really eat breadcrumbs off the floor? Number two, do you really need a shamash talmid chacham to understand to pick up breadcrumbs? And number three, another thing that's bothering me, something said a few minutes ago, why in the Braita does the explanation of Beit Hillel not include the law of Hillel? It just includes the sentence about Shamash Talmid Chacham, but it doesn't actually say what the Mishnah says about the fact that you have to first do Mayim Rachonim, and then Mechabed at the Bayit. Why is it missing? It's like the Ikar HaSeir Menaseir, but the main thing is missing
from the text.
I'm doing my magic marker.
That's unprecedented or very unusual?
It's not unprecedented. but here, it's not just that it's missing, but it's found in Beit Shammai. It's missing in Beit Hillel.
It's asymmetrical.
Is this lacking symmetry?
Yeah.
So let's see two other commentaries which might help us. One of them is the Me'iri. Rabbeinu Menachem HaMe'iri from Provence in the 14th century. So on this page, and the Me'iri is there in the left-hand column, where in my handwriting I wrote, Beit Bechira L'Rabbeinu Me'iri Brachot Nun Bet. I'll show you again the places right over here, where my finger is. Mm-hmm. The Me'iri says, we're reading from the third line where the bracket begins. Vamru Beit Shammai, Mechabdin et Abayit, Perush HaShulchan, Uma shesamuch l'shulchan min habayit. Translation, that when Beit Shammai said we mechabed et habayit, the explanation is, it's the shulchan. Means clean off the shulchan, and that which is near the shulchan of the house. It's not the whole house, but those parts of the house that are near the shulchan. That's fine. Going on. Min hapirim hagdolim. Of the big crumbs. In other words, what do we sweep up? We sweep up the big crumbs. Shabau lahatzniyam. Shabau means that they come. It means that you're supposed to lahatzniyam. You're supposed to save them. You're supposed to save the big crumbs. Vahu sheyesh bem kazait. And that is that they have in them a kazait. By big we mean they have a kazait. V'harkach notlim mayim achonim. And afterwards, we do mayim achonim. She'im yitol tchila v'yivarech, that if you will do netila first, v'yivarech, and say berkat hamazon, yelech lo balabait, the balabait will go for himself, he'll leave, and he gets up and goes after berkat hamazon. Ve'ein hashamash choshish latznia et the peorim. And the hashash, and the shamash will not be careful to save the crumbs. Ve'nimset mafsid lochlim. And it turns out that we were destroying food. Shestam shamashim, that normal shamashim, normal servants are ame'aretem, they're ama'aretz. So wait a second. The Me'iri said the fear in our Mishnah, the problem, is not that breadcrumbs will get wet. It's rather that the shamash will be lazy and he won't clean up at all. So what's happening? So Beit Shammai says, well look, it really is important to do netilah and Birkat HaMazon right after eating. But if I do that and I go away, the shamash is going to go play baseball. And he's not going to do his work. And then the breadcrumbs will stay on the floor and they'll get ruined. Not from the water of Mayim Achonim, but simply by people walking out of the house. Therefore, Beit Shammai says, I'm going to tell the shamash to sweep up before Birkat Mazon, because then I'm still there and I can watch him. Because I assume my shamash is an Amaretz. Well, Amaretz doesn't know the halahat, it means he's lazy. And what I'm going to tell him to do is sweep up. You only have to sweep up the big crumbs. Because those, there's a halachic obligation to save. The small crumbs you can leave. We don't care about a dirty house. Beit Hillel says, I trust my shamash. He's a Talmid Chacham. Talmid Chacham doesn't mean that he knows the halacha. It means he has a conscience. That when I tell him to do something, or he knows the halacha, he'll do it. So therefore, I can say Berkat HaMazon, and I can leave, and I can trust him to pick up the breadcrumbs from the floor.
Are those terms used elsewhere in the context of being industrious versus lazy? Because I've never heard that before. So
I don't know. I can just assume that someone who knows the halakha also wants to keep the halakha. Whereas someone who doesn't know it, you have to tell him, if you're not there to watch, what does he care?
You're talking about Yirat Shamayim?
I guess you're talking about Yirat Shamayim, conscientiousness here. It's one and the same thing. So now we've explained some of the issues, perhaps all of the issues that we have on the board. I can't remember what they were. The first issue was, did they really eat breadcrumbs off the floor? So that remains, yes, we still seem to be saying that you... either they ate breadcrumbs off the floor, or at least they didn't want those big breadcrumbs to stay on the floor. Perhaps not because they would eat them later, because they have to be disposed of respectfully.
Yeah. But they talk about saving.
Lahatzniyam, right? It says lahatzniyam. Yeah. That means to save them. Perhaps it just means...
There are a lot of things that you could... I mean, I don't know about on the floor, but big breadcrumbs, I mean, if you have loaves, and let's say you dip and whatever, you have lots of pieces. There are lots of things in cooking you can do with pieces. You can use them to thicken soups. You can, there are salads fattoush you make, with pieces of bread, with the leaves and the oil.
And especially if it's like pita. Pita with crumbs.
You can feed it to the ducks.
Well, that you can feed to the ducks even if it got swept up.
Right.
Okay, could be. I'm not expert enough to...
Yeah, I mean, but I can understand the floor not being appetizing, but there is a use for big...
But the question of, do you need a Talmid Chacham to know the difference between big and small breadcrumbs? So that issue, the Meiri dealt with. You need a Talmid Chacham as the conscientiousness to do what he's supposed to do, even when we're not there. And then the other issue we said, and this is important now, we have to go back to the Gemara and notice, we asked, why is the Braita missing the law according to Hillel? Because according to Rashi's interpretation, remember, and this is important, according to Rashi's interpretation of Hillel, what happens is three stages, according to Rashi, that the Shamash Talmid Chacham gets in his hands and knees, picks up the big bit crumbs. You do Nitilan Birkat HaMazon, and then Mechabed at HaBayit. The Meiri doesn't have those three stages. For the Meiri, picking up the big breadcrumbs is synonymous with Mechabed at HaBayit. So now if we go back to the Braita, we understand the structure of the Braita according to the Meiri. Let's look at the Braita. At Hillel in the Braita. Up here, where my finger is, right? Very top of the page. It says, Beit Hillel Rim, Im Shamash Talmid Chacham, Hu Notel Perim Sheish Bem Kazait, Uminiach Perim Shein Bem Kazait. According to the Rashi interpretation, what that meant was that the Shamash Talmid Chacham picks up the crumbs that have a kazait and leaves the crumbs that don't have a kazait. And then you immediately do Netilat Yadayim and Birkat HaMazon, and then Mechabed at HaBayit. Three stages according to Rashi. Okay? Mm-hmm. According to the Meiri, no. According to the Meiri, there's no three stages. There's only two. According to the Meiri, this words here, Beit Hillel, about the Shamash picking up the big breadcrumbs, leaving the small ones, that's not what he does before the Netilah, that's what he does after the Netilah, and that's an explanation of what it means, Mechabed at HaBayit. And all it is trying to say is that since I know that my Shamash will do what it's supposed to do, therefore I can do and say Netilah and Birkat HaMazon before he does it, because I know he's going to do it. That's why it doesn't say here the law of Hillel, because this is the law of Hillel in different words. This is Hillel's explanation of Mechabed at HaBayit, and he's saying, I have a Shamash that knows to Mechabed at HaBayit, therefore I can do my Netilah earlier. So the Meiri answered our difficulties against Rashi. But something else is still bothering me.
Eating the bread?
No, something else that we haven't mentioned. Listen to this. The Braita emphasized two things. Not only that the Shamash picks up the big breadcrumbs, It also said he leaves the small breadcrumbs. Why is that important? Why is it important that he leaves the small breadcrumbs? Whether it's Rashi or the Meiri, whether it's Rashi, that he gets on his hands and knees before I do the Netilah, why does he have to leave the small ones? If he's already there, pick them up. And if it's the Meiri, that I can trust him to pick up the big breadcrumbs, so why is it important that he leaves the small ones?
I think it has to do with the experience of the meal and the blessing coming in close proximity to the end of the meal, not taking all this time to clean up and then bless.
Aha, uh-huh, okay. I hear.
And I also read that into the ruining of the food somewhat, of Shammai's statement, that when he says, you know, that it ruins the food, you're not talking about saving the breadcrumbs. He's talking about the experience of the meal. Did you still have the flavor in your mouth when you
Okay, I certainly didn't see that in any of the commentators, but I hear.
No, I'm not. Yeah,
but to pick up the block big and leave the small is presumably what influences Rashi to say there's three stages. This is the first stage. Just okay, get the big piece out of the way. That's a quick, in a sense, to get on with it. Yeah, get the big piece that you're going to save out of the way.
Yeah.
The cleaning is more time consuming.
I hear. Okay, I hear. But still, if we could find a better explanation for this matter of leaving the small breadcrumbs, I would like it.
Mm-hmm. I think that it's. There is definitely a problem with just ruining food. The fact of ruining bread, whether you're going to eat it or not, since it's kashrut, it's considered something that it would be the size it would be edible. Mm-hmm. Even if he's going to eat it or not, he probably won't eat it. That's what I think. But the fact that if he gets it wet, he's going to ruin it.
Okay, I can hear that. But it still doesn't deal with the question of the small breadcrumbs. Why is it important to have these small breadcrumbs left there?
Is it important? Because the small breadcrumbs would not be a problem in that sense. Because
I understand, but that just says we don't have to pick them up. Right. What is the break to emphasize we have to leave them? It almost says we have to leave them there. As if there's some value in having small breadcrumbs.
Somehow related to the corners of the field being left.
Well, here I want to mention a commentary of Professor Shaul Lieberman. Professor Shaul Lieberman was considered to be the greatest Talmid Chacham of the second half of the 20th century in America. I didn't say the greatest Posek. He wasn't a Posek Halacha. He was just a Talmid Chacham, a man of great, great respect. He devoted his life to editing and commenting on the Tosefta. And he published a work called the Tosefta Kipshuta. The whole Tosefta edited from different grand manuscripts and commented on in an unbelievably detailed commentary. And in his commentary on the Tosefta, this bright appears in the Tosefta, he has the following, which we're going to read together. I photostudied this commentary. That's where my finger is on the next page. Even though I put the bracket at the end of the first line, let's read from the beginning. Because his introduction is very cute. He says, see the place Tosefta Kipshuta, where my finger is? Okay. He says, "Uvederech yitachen ulai ve'efshar," by way of possible, maybe, and perhaps, I'll say the following. He's really going on the limb, he says. But he's really bothered by this matter of the small breadcrumbs. He has to make something up that's going to make some sense, because he's really bothered. So, "Uvederech yitachen ulai ve'efshar," Niva'er al pi ze gam et the brightot shalanu. We will explain, according to this, something he said earlier that I didn't bring here, also our brightot. And he says as follows. Look at this. Minhag hakadmonim haya. The custom of the ancient ones was lekaneach et yedehem, to wipe their hands bepeirurim harakim shel hapat, with the soft crumbs of the pita. They didn't have paper towels. They liked to use the pita to clean off their hands. he claims. And he has a footnote in which he discovered an ancient manuscript that's not in Tosefta, not in the Gemara, not in place else. It says, it talks about the custom of wiping your hands with the bread. V'nizraku aharkach leklavim, and afterwards they were thrown to the dogs. Not the people, but the dirty breadcrumbs were thrown to the dogs. And he has a source for that also. Ukvar hishiru chazal, and our rabbis already warned, V'ein mekanech yadav bepat, you shouldn't wipe your hands with bread. In other words, the custom was to wipe the hands with bread, but the rabbi said, don't do it, because it's not respectful to the bread. Lefichach hasheshu Beit Shammai, shema yekanchu ha'orchim et yedehem mipiruim sheish pem kezayit. Therefore, were apprehensive Beit Shammai, lest the guests wipe their hands with the peruim, the crumbs that have a kezayit. Professor Lieberman is assuming that when Chazal said you can't wipe your hands with bread, they only meant bread that has a kezayit, because that's an extensive amount. If you want to wipe your hands with tiny crumbs that don't have a kezayit, please do so, it doesn't matter. And Beit Shammai, why did Beit Shammai said that you should first mechabed at the bayit and then do nitila? Because we want to get rid of the big breadcrumbs as soon as possible so the guests don't have the temptation of wiping their hands with the breadcrumbs. That's Beit Shammai. Umishum kach amru, and because of that they said, shemavirin et peirim lefnei rechitzat yadayim, and that's why they said that we take away the crumbs before the washing of the hands. Aval Beit Hillel matirin, but Beit Hillel allowed. What do they allow? We'll see what he says. V'sovrin shashamash ha-pikeach yaniach ochlim she'en pechotim mikazayit v'yavir t'perim magdolim v'aruchim yechulim lekanech yedehem v'ochlim she'en pechot mikazayit. But Beit Hillel holds that the intelligent servant, right, the Tamid Chacham, will leave on the table the small breadcrumbs and take away the big breadcrumbs. And the guests can wipe their hands with the little breadcrumbs that are left that have pachot mikazayit, less than a kazayit. She'ein dem chashash ibud ochlin, obdan ochlin, because there's no fear, there's no problem of destroying food when it's pachot mikazayit, less than a kazayit. So let's take this interpretation, read it back now in the Braita. That will close, I know it's late. So if we go back to the Braita, so remember, the position of Beit Hillel is that we first do Nitila and then we do Kibud HaBayit. So, the Professor Lieberman is holding like Rashi in the sense there are three stages. That the reason we can do Nitila immediately before Kibud HaBayit is because we trust the servant. He'll swoop in there, as we're about to start Nitilat Yadayim, he'll take away all the big breadcrumbs to prevent the guests from giving into the temptation of cleaning their hands with them. He'll take them away, and he'll leave the small ones, because we want to give the guests an opportunity to clean their hands with something. There is a value in leaving the small breadcrumbs there. So he'll leave the small ones, and what do you need to tell Talmid Chacham for that? Because there's a tension between what the people want, what the halakha wants. You need a Talmid Chacham who's going to politely but forcefully take away the napkins. Because people want those napkins, but he can't have to take them away. So we need a Talmid Chacham for that, and he's going to do that. And he's going to leave them the small breadcrumbs so they can wipe their hands, and we'll do Nitilat Yadayim, and then afterwards we'll have them come in and sweep the floor.
Throw the tasty napkins to the dogs.
And throw the tasty napkins, the small tasty napkins to the dogs. Whereas the big tasty napkins he took off the table to protect, either to eat them or simply to dispose of them respectfully. Right. Okay, so if your wives ask you what you learned today, we learned about sweeping the house.
Also,
and wiping your hands after you eat.
Yeah, also if my wife sees me rolling my breadcrumbs together, she's not sure. coming by.